Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with easy passage of something by the United States Senate that we've been looking forward to. It was almost 3 months ago that President Trump surprised a lot of people by firing FBI Director James Comey. Since then, there's been a lot of political wrangling, a lot of political hand-wringing. But in the meantime, the president nominated former Justice Department official Christopher Wray to be the next FBI director. And on Tuesday, he was confirmed by a lopsided vote of 92-5 in the United States Senate. So Christopher Wray is the new FBI director of the United States. And just as a little bit of background, Christopher Wray was appointed and nominated by George W. Bush in 2003 as Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Criminal Division of the Justice Department. He was confirmed unanimously by the Senate at that time. He was Assistant Attorney General from 2003 to 2005, working under then-Deputy Attorney General, James Comey. Meanwhile, a lot of people seem to like this choice. Ben Sasse, among many, issuing a statement following the vote, pretty simple, saying, "Chris Wray will bring character and competence to a city that is hemorrhaging public trust. Instead of more Washington partisan blood feuds and lazy hot takes, I expect that Director Wray will buckle down and get to work. This is good news for the American people and for the men and women who faithfully serve our country at the FBI." So, Jim, this was a smooth process. The media is still trying to make it look like in some ways it wasn't, because CNN has a story saying only six people have ever voted against an FBI director. Five of them did it today. Yeah, it was still 92-5. Gillibrand, Markey, Merkley, Warren, and Wyden were the no votes from the Democratic side. But, Jim, in a six-month span here where it seems like getting anything substantive through Congress is almost torturous, getting this done fairly smoothly is good news indeed.
You know how you can tell when a nomination process is running exceptionally smoothly, Greg?
What's that?
When guys like you and I forget that it's going on. Right? I mean, if there was any reason, and this is what you kind of like to ask those five Senate Democrats, what are you seeing that all of your colleagues missed? What, you know, spidey sense is tingling on your part that's telling you Christopher Wray is going to be a problem at the Federal Bureau of Investigation? Because apparently everybody else can see it at a time when everybody and their brother has every conceivable motivation to find a reason to oppose a Trump nomination beyond partisan politics, which I think is the easiest way to explain those five. That if Christopher Wray had any conflict of interest, if he had ever uttered anything along the lines of, maybe this Vladimir Putin guy is not so bad, you know, we would have heard about it, right? The Democrats would have, and they'd have good reason to, right? You know, there is obviously, and after the Comey firing, the tensions with Jeff Sessions and every other bit of controversy that has dogged this administration for the first 6 months, there is every reason in the world to look for something being hinky or out of sorts or suspicious about the man Trump picks to run the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And, you know, judging from this, nobody found anything. Christopher Wray is a perfectly fine choice. That almost never happens. we should be celebrating this. And it kind of does, you know, this theory of, you know, Trump is running the White House like the mafia, and he's operating like a crime family and stuff like that. Look, you know, generally mobsters don't put really, really good guys in charge of the FBI. So I think that in a Washington where it feels like nothing is going right, and there's this endless partisan division and accusations and counter accusations and denials and cover ups and all that kind of stuff, one part of the government, and a pretty darn important part, ran pretty smoothly. And for that, that's a reason for cheers.
Yeah. Let's hope he can go a few weeks on the job without getting a tweet directed.
Whoa, come on. Let's get a little, you know. Baby steps, Greg.
All right. Well, that's one vacancy filled. Let's shift to our bad martini now. And there is a cabinet vacancy currently as a result of President Trump choosing Homeland Security Secretary and retired Marine four-star General John Kelly to be the new chief of staff. He's been our good martini both Monday and Tuesday of this week in that new position. But of course, as we just mentioned, that does leave a vacancy there. There is a deputy there, so there is an acting Homeland Security Secretary. But there is a working shortlist, or what many people believe to be the shortlist, for replacement for John Kelly. And one of the names that is on that list, just as it was when Trump was putting his cabinet together in the first place, is Texas Republican Congressman Mike McCaul, who is chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. Now, he is clearly not the favorite of border security enthusiasts, but nonetheless, he is on the short list, or at least believed to be on the short list. But right now, CNN and other sources reporting that Mike McCaul is very seriously considering withdrawing his name from contention because he doesn't like the way that Trump has treated other administration officials, namely Jeff Sessions as the attorney general, and how he's also treated other loyalists like New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Here is one quote, of course, attributed to someone who's simply a source. Quote, McCaul has built an excellent reputation in the House and in Texas. He won't want decades of hard work to be called into question or undone in 140 characters by an executive whose temperament and positions seem to change by the hour, unquote. So, Jim, I think if he withdraws his name, as mentioned, there's some conservatives who will breathe a sigh of relief. But the idea that you have no interest in serving in a higher level of government, even for a brief period of time, because you think you're going to get trashed by the president who nominated you, is probably not a good precedent to start.
Yeah, and let's point out that, yes, even though this is involving unnamed sources, this doesn't seem like a terribly implausible assessment to come from the congressman. Now, there are some folks I know who are not enthused about the possibility of him getting this. I guess they see him as a squish on certain issues. I don't necessarily share those concerns, but this is what, you know, a potential consequence when the president goes on Twitter tirades against Jeff Sessions and when he fires Comey with very little warning and this sense of constant tumult in the administration and the fact that, you know, the president joked about firing Tom Price and this sense that Trump is so mercurial, Trump is so erratic and quick to lash out when he senses a disagreement or any degree of slight or lack of respect. Somebody who's got a good position in Capitol Hill isn't going to want to deal with that. And they're just going to be much happier continuing to do what they do and having the say in policy that they do on Capitol Hill and not want to be in a situation where on any given moment the president could lash out at them. I think the president, and note, this is not the first time a president has been really frustrated with members of their cabinet. It's just that they don't usually air it out in public. And Trump has got to learn this. Otherwise, he's just going to turn himself into a, you know, maybe in New York real estate, there's an endless supply of lawyers and aides and gophers and staffers and accountants and all these kinds of people. There's an endless supply of people who are, you know, if you fire one person, there's 10 more people who want the same job. It may not be the same deal in Washington, or at least there may not be 10 similarly qualified people who are willing to work for a boss. The dismissal of Comey and the sudden lashing out of Sessions, there is this sense that at any given point the president could fire you. And why would you give up something in which, if you look, McCaul's not going to lose his seat until he retires, right? He's a very Republican seat. He likes what he does. People aren't going to want to leave good jobs in order to work in your administration if they feel like they can get fired at any second. So, you know, you can argue about whether people should be willing to live with that, you know, axe hanging over their head, but that's the reality of things. And the president's got to start treating his own people better if he wants to, you know, build that mutual loyalty and people to be eager to work in his administration and to enact his agenda.
So if he bows out or doesn't get the nod, here's a few more names at the end of this CNN article, along with Duke, who is the acting secretary, and Sessions. Other candidates who have been mentioned as potential candidates for the top DHS job include Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, who, by the way, is leading the Voter Integrity Commission and is running for governor of Kansas, so he's a little busy. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas and Thomas Homan, the acting director of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So we'll watch that. We want to keep the border safe. We want to keep the country safe. We also want to keep your home safe. A lot of us get excited for summer because it means going on vacation or spending long days at the beach and maybe taking the kids to an amusement park or two. You know what a burglar gets excited about during summer? Knowing that you're going to be gone, that your house is going to be very vulnerable, particularly if you don't have any sort of security. Summer is prime time for burglary, so now is the time to protect your home. And for a limited time, you can take a whopping $100 off SimpliSafe's special summer package.
This is SimpliSafe's biggest ever summer sale. It has everything you need to protect your home, an arsenal of security sensors to secure each door and window. Your SimpliSafe system comes with a panic button, a blaring extra siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch. Your family, your home, and everything in it will stay safe around the clock. With SimpliSafe, there are no long-term contracts, no installation costs, and no hidden fees. 24/7 professional monitoring is just $14.99 a month.
Man, don't you just love those terms? No long-term contracts, no installation costs, no hidden fees, less than $15 a month. That's unbelievable. This summer, see what SimpliSafe can do for your home. Get $100 off your summer security package at simplisafe.com/ricochet. But you've got to hurry because this offer does end soon. That's simplisafe.com/ricochet to get your $100 off. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. SimpliSafe.com/ricochet for $100 off. All right, Jim, let's move on to the grievance police here for our crazy martini now. And this is courtesy of the opinion pages of the Washington Post. This was written by a guy named James Mulvaney, who is an adjunct professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. This public service announcement, don't send your kids to study criminal justice under James Mulvaney at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He is responding to President Trump's speech up on Long Island late last week, in which he was talking to police officers and got in a little bit of trouble for suggesting that it's okay to rough up some suspects sometimes. And while Mr. Mulvaney is upset about that as well, he's also upset about another part of the speech. He says the use of the derogatory phrase paddy wagon wasn't the worst thing President Trump said last week, but it shouldn't get lost amid the litany of objectionable utterances. And Trump was talking about throwing thugs into the back of the paddy wagon. And so after being upset with the roughing up of the thugs, he says, but I was also put off by Trump's description of police rounding up gang members into a quote-unquote paddy wagon. To many Irish Americans like myself, the phrase is insulting. It should not be used in polite discourse. Paddy, of course, borrows from the pet form of the common Irish name Patrick and has long been deployed as a slur. The origin of paddy wagon, though, is unclear. And he goes on to explain that some thought it was because the Irish were not welcome when they first came here in the 1840s and beyond, and so they were arrested a lot, and that's why they were called paddy wagons. Another explanation is that by the early 20th century, much of law enforcement in New York and elsewhere was made up of Irish Americans, and so they were driving the paddy wagons. Either way, he's upset with the term, didn't even like it when Martin Luther King Jr. used it in the I've Been to the Mountaintop speech. And he says, I certainly don't think King intended to slight Irish Americans, and Trump probably didn't either, but that doesn't take the sting out of the phrase when I hear it. Here's my favorite part. 2 years ago, I complained to the New York Times about the appearance of paddy wagon in a crossword puzzle. Puzzle editor Will Shortz dismissed my objections, writing, the Irish are not a group that's discriminated against in the United States. And he concludes by saying that's generally true, but each use of the phrase paddy wagon evokes a time when they were. Jim, you have Irish descent, so you can comment on this however you want. What do you make of Mr. Mulvaney's assertions?
Greg, the accusation that the Irish are a bunch of drunks insults me. I'm going to stop that because it's just, I can't do an entire segment that way. Greg, so we're done, right? There are no other problems. The world is fixed. There's nothing else. There are no other problems in the drunk administration. Boy, there's a Freudian slip. People can think I really am drinking. It really do take three martinis during their lunches. I'm trying to think of a comparable Greek analogy that you can be offended about or something. But really, this is what we're worried about in the Trump administration, the use of the term paddy wagon, you know? That you might argue that is the least, considering the story he told to the Boy Scouts and all that, that might be the least offensive thing the president has said in his entire presidency so far. I told the crossword puzzle editor, and he laughed at me. He didn't take me seriously. Like, maybe this is a sign to you. I left scratching the head. Dear Washington Post op-ed page editor, what are you thinking? Slow news day? Nothing else going on? This is the biggest worry? You know. Look, the point that he says towards the end where the guy says, look, the Irish are not objects of discrimination and ridicule in this country. We might argue around St. Patrick's Day that stereotypes flow around and things like that. But really, all in all, this is not something to get worried about. And the fact that he says, I was only mildly offended when Martin Luther King used the term. Yes, how dare you, Martin Luther King? I'll teach him. How dare he? this isn't even above first world problems. This is like, at this point, if you're complaining about this, it's sort of a humble brag. It's sort of a, I have so few things to worry about in my life that I'm getting offended about Trump using the term paddy wagon in a series of comments where he appears to give a, at least a wink and a nod to police brutality. I mean, really, we've got much bigger fish to fry here. Because he should, you know, come around to that, because if there's anything the Irish like, it's fried fish.
I believe the Irish are celebrated on St. Patrick's Day, or maybe alcohol, I guess, more specifically.
Actually, what it is, we're impersonated, you know, but I was going to say on St. Patrick's Day, and you know, the all kinds of jokes, kiss me, I'm Irish. I'm willing to share a whole bunch of them. Some of those folks aren't actually Irish. But, you know, if we complain about our national holiday turning into an excuse for drinking, somewhere the Mexican Americans are saying, oh, really? Because Cinco de Mayo gets treated so seriously.
You know,
look, America is the kind of xenophobic country that will look at any holiday from any other foreign culture and turn it into an excuse to drink.
Just remember, however, once you've worn the green on March 17th, a mere scant 8 days later, March 25th is Greek Independence Day. So buck up on the blue wardrobe and the white and show it proudly. I'm sure all of you will.
There you go.
Jim, have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security and get that $100 off your new home security system, simplysafe.com/ricochet. And tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.